Jesus. Y'all, it's funny. I was talking to Jacob. I was last week, week before, and we were just comparing our daily lives, you know. And it's like it almost seems like sometimes God will take all the other things in your life, and it'll make them very difficult. And I wonder if He does that to push us toward worship. So when we gather with the saints to worship Him, it just means that much more. You know, it's like one thing we can really look forward to, not because it's something we necessarily want to do, but it's because it's something that we know our souls need to do. And so it really pushes us in that direction. Because if everything's just groovy, hitting on all cylinders all the time, you don't recognize the need as much as you do when things kind of get sideways. So I don't know, just an observation. So John 11, we spent 3 weeks in John 10, probably going to spend about that long in John 11. I don't know, we'll see how it goes. Now before we get started, I want to be honest with y'all about something. Of all the chapters in John's gospel, John 11 scares me the most. And for those who may not know, John 11 is the story of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. Now you might be thinking, but Mike, that should be easy preaching. Why are you scared? And I would say I'm scared because it is easy preaching. And one of the things I'm learning, especially as I get older, is that really nothing God does and nothing God asks me to do is easy. It might sound easy, like husbands, love your wife the way Christ loved the church. That's Ephesians 5, right? Verse 25 says that husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church, which might not sound easy, but doesn't sound all that hard either. I know it doesn't take much for me to love Lori, because Lori's easy to love. She's a faithful friend and a willing accomplice, right? She's a great mom. So for this husband to love his wife, that's easy, until I keep reading in Ephesians 5. Turns out I'm not supposed to just love my wife. I'm supposed to love my wife the way that Christ loved the church. Okay, so how did Christ love the church? He gave Himself up for her. So let's set that to the side for a minute. I'm going to come back to it. Why did Christ give Himself up for her? Well, all I got to do is keep reading. So that's a good thing about Scripture. You just keep reading. And it kind of answers its own questions. Verse 26 of Ephesians 5 says that Christ gave Himself up for her so that He might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the Word, so that He might present the church to Himself in splendor. Now let's run through those real quick. First of all, Jesus wants to sanctify her. What does that mean? Well, to sanctify means to set apart. Jesus' love for the church sets the church apart. It sets the church apart for God's special purpose. Husbands, your love for your wife should set her apart. Your love for her should honor her as someone unique and special. She is not like other people, not to you. She's sanctified. Next, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the Word. So the image Paul wants us to see is Jesus cleansing His people with Holy Scripture, that's the Word, and with baptism, that's the washing of water. Husbands, we have a responsibility to help lead our wives towards spiritual wholeness. We're supposed to pray for them and pray with them. And I know the with them can be a lot harder than the for them, right? Many nights, Lori and I crawl into bed, fully intending to pray together, but before that can happen, I fall asleep. Because she's usually reading a book, and I'm waiting for her to get to a stopping point. And before she does that, I'm out. She's even told me many mornings, well, I rolled over to pray, and you were snoring, so I just kept on reading. Last thing, so that He might present the church to Himself in splendor. The language is so beautiful. In other words, Jesus lifts the church up. Husbands, we're to lift her up. We are to, the way we love our wives should bring her best out of her. Okay? Should bring her best out of her. We should be building her up, not tearing her down. Because let's be honest, ladies, y'all do a good enough job tearing yourselves down. Guys, our wives are to be presented in splendor, meaning that all that dignity and that value and that beauty that her insecurities keep pushed down, our job is to pull that stuff up to the surface so that she can see it and she can really start to believe it because it's true. Now, how do we do that? Well, we pick up what I said to put aside earlier. He gave himself up for her. It sounds like I'm picking on guys this morning, and I kind of am. So, guys, if we're going to love our wives the way Christ loved the church, we have to see her as worth dying for. And I don't just mean laying down your life for her. I mean laying down your pride for her. I mean laying down your ego for her. I mean laying down that hunting trip because she needs to spend time with you. I mean laying down the things you want so that you can give her the things her soul needs. Now take all of that and pile it up in front of you. And pretty soon, it doesn't take long for me to realize that loving my wife is not easy. It's not supposed to be. Maybe it's easy by my standards, but not by Jesus' standards. And his standards are the only ones that matter. Nothing Jesus did was easy. And John 11 is one of the better examples of that in the New Testament. So let's read verses 1 through 6, and hopefully we can see what I'm talking about. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him, saying, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister Mary. Jesus loved Martha and her sister Mary and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. So Jesus loved this family so much that when he heard his buddy was super sick, he didn't do anything. Even though his sisters were so worried that they sent somebody to find Jesus and tell him how sick their brother was. Verse 3 says the sisters sent to him. So this person who told Jesus about Lazarus didn't just happen to bump into him in the grocery store and say, "Hey, did you hear about Lazarus?" No, they sent to Jesus. They said, "Go find Jesus and tell him about our brother. Tell him how sick he is. Tell him we're worried he's not going to make it and that we need him here now." And Jesus doesn't do anything. And you never want to question Jesus' motives, right? But that just seems so cold and so unloving. I mean, in Mark 5, when Jairus' daughter gets sick, he begs Jesus to come and heal her. And Jesus can't get there fast enough. He wants to go there so he can heal her. And in Luke 7, a Roman army officer sent to Jesus, the same way Mary and Martha did, because his servant was sick. Luke says he was close to dying. And the messengers don't even ask Jesus to come to the house. The centurion just wanted Jesus to say the words. And he believed that Jesus' words would make his servant better. And Jesus marveled at the man's faith, and he said the words, and the servant was healed. But when Jesus heard about his dear friend and his grief-stricken sisters, he could have just said the words and Lazarus would have gotten better, but he didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. Has Jesus ever done that to you? You ask him, you beg him to do something, and he doesn't do anything. You know, we all love the story of Jesus raising Lazarus. I mean, how could we not, right? But I think the most valuable lesson for us in this story is verse 6. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Y'all, everybody loves the happy ending, okay? Lazarus hopping out of the tomb, still wrapped in his grave clothes. His sisters overwhelmed with joy because they get their brother back. That's easy. Everybody loves that. That's easy. But for Jesus, knowing Lazarus was going to die, knowing the pain it was going to cause his sweet sisters, knowing how it was going to tear up everybody in Bethany to lose that man, he stayed two more days in the place where he was. I cannot imagine how hard that was for Jesus. The anguish that he was in. Because Jesus didn't even have to go to Bethany. He could have just told the messenger, "No, dude, Lazarus is good. Trust me, he's up aggravating his sisters as we speak. He's fine." But he didn't do that. He didn't do anything. Which, apart from the cross, was probably the hardest thing Jesus ever did. The healing of Lazarus is the greatest miracle Jesus ever did, apart from the cross. It was the seventh and final and greatest sign that John recorded apart from the resurrection. John used each different sign to give the reader a different revelation as to who Jesus is, okay? The last sign, this greatest sign, is Jesus proving that he really is the resurrection and the life, and that even death must obey him. But before the miracle came the waiting. And nobody likes the waiting. Before Jesus gave this family what they wanted, he needed to teach them something that they did not want to learn. And our friend John thought that this was so important, he put it in here. It's a very hard truth to accept. And that hard truth is that God does not act according to the urgency of human emotion. I'm going to say that again. God does not act according to the urgency of human emotion. He acts in His timing, according to His purposes, to accomplish His will. And I don't think we're expected to really understand that, but I do think we're expected to accept that. God not acting as fast as we'd like Him to, or in the way that we want Him to, does not mean that He is ignoring us. It doesn't mean that He's avoiding us or that He doesn't care about us. On the contrary, it usually means that He's preparing a clearer, greater revelation of Himself that He wants to give us. And that only happens in His timing, according to His purposes, to accomplish His will. And His will in John 11 is for the Son of God to be glorified. That's what Jesus said. Now, y'all remember when we covered chapter 9? We talked about how Jesus and His disciples, they were walking past the man born blind, right? And Jesus asked one question, but His students asked a different question. His students wanted to know, why was this man blind? Did he sin? Did his parents sin? Who sinned? Why is he blind? But Jesus asked, what does my Father want to do with this? How will the Son of Man be glorified through this man born blind? And we all know what happened. When Jesus was told about his friend being sick and his sisters being worried, I think, and this is just me, okay? I want to be clear about that. This doesn't say this in the text. This is just me. But I think, based on what I know about Jesus, it took everything in him not to run to Bethany right there. He was lacing up his shoes. I mean, he was ready to go. He wanted to go so bad. Inside his huge heart, Jesus hurt for his friends. He wanted to make Lazarus better. But it's those opportunities again. Those opportunities to do the Father's work while it's still daytime. Jesus mentions all that again in chapter 11. But Jesus tells us in verse 4 that He knew what this was. This was one of those last opportunities He would have to do His Father's work. And this one was going to be huge. He said, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. And when Jesus says that this illness will not lead to death, He's not denying death, okay? Let's not be silly. He's not pretending that what's about to happen isn't going to happen. Jesus is redefining what death is. He goes over all of this with Martha later in the chapter. Now that Jesus is here, death does not mean what it used to mean. He tells Martha, now that He's here, whoever believes in Him, though they die, they will live. And everyone who lives and believes in Him will never die. In other words, death no longer has the last word. It is not final for the believer anymore because He's here. The resurrection and the life is here. Do you believe this? That's the question Jesus asked Martha. That's the question John is asking all of us. Do you believe? Do you believe? Not do you understand, okay? Because we're not going to understand everything. We're not going to be able to reconcile everything the Bible teaches with what we know about people and with what we know about the world. But like we've talked about so many times before, John did not write these things so that we'd understand. These things are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. And that by believing, not understanding, by believing you may have life in His name. Now, understanding is a wonderful thing. I'm all for it. But it follows belief. It does not go in front of it. It follows belief. Because without believing, we can't be saved. Without new life, we're condemned to old death. And if we stay dead, all the understanding in the world is not going to do us any good. And we should never feel bad for not understanding either, okay? The disciples literally lived with Jesus, and they didn't understand a lot of things. But they did not let their lack of understanding keep them from saying the first thing that popped in their heads a lot of times. Look at verse 7. It says, "And after this, He said to the disciples, 'Let us go to Judea again.' The disciples said to Him, 'Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and are you going there again?'" Now, we can't be too hard on them for that, can we? I mean, really. They love Jesus. They're just trying to protect Him. That's all. Which at this point might seem kind of silly, but their hearts are in the right place, you know? I think Jesus feels that way too. So in verse 11, He says, "Look guys, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep. So I'm going to go wake him up." And then in verse 12, they do it again. They say, "Rabbi, hang on. If he's asleep, he'll get better." And just to make sure the reader understands how clueless the disciples are about what's going on, John tells us specifically. He stops the narrative and tells us specifically in verse 13 that Jesus was talking about Lazarus being dead, but His disciples thought He meant that he was asleep. Then in 14, John says that Jesus told them plainly because He had to, because they're knuckleheads. And I love that because now I don't feel so bad. But Jesus said to him, He's like, "Look at me, Lazarus has died." Just waiting for a reaction. And He says, "And for your sake, I'm glad I wasn't there." Now, y'all, that last part, that's huge. That's huge. Verse 15 of chapter 11 is a hinge moment in John's gospel. And what I mean by that is from verse 15 forward, everything shifts. Everything changes. Because the story of Lazarus, as awesome as it is, it does not stand on its own, okay? It is a preview of Jesus' resurrection. Lazarus' tomb is a preview of Jesus' tomb. If you've ever read the story completely, it's the same tomb. Not physically the same tomb, but the same kind of tomb. The sisters crying and grieving are a preview of the women at Jesus' cross, crying and grieving. Jesus told the folks at Lazarus' tomb to roll back the stone and take off the grave clothes. Because that's exactly what was going to happen on Easter morning. The stone was going to roll away. The grave clothes were coming off. So when Jesus told his disciples that for their sake, he's glad he wasn't there, that's exactly what he meant. Jesus always sees big picture. Remember, it's not just the thing in front of him. It's all the other things around it. The disciples needed to see what was coming, the resurrection of Lazarus, so they could be prepared for what was coming, the resurrection of Jesus. So that what Jesus told them at the end of verse 15 would come true, and what he said was that you would believe. That they would believe. When Jesus said, "Let us go to him," he was also saying, "The road to the cross begins now." Everything gets harder from this point forward. And it is not enough that they believe Jesus can heal the sick and cast out demons. They need to believe that Jesus can raise the dead. So Jesus let death run its course on his best friend so he could show his disciples, the ones who will carry on his work when he's gone, right? So he could show them that he is the resurrection and the life. And because he is, even death has to obey him. That got me a lot more excited than it seems to be getting y'all. He is the resurrection and the life. And even death has to obey him. Think about it. If Jesus doesn't have authority over death, he cannot be the resurrection. They need to see that. It's one thing to hear it. It's a whole other thing to see it. So when Jesus was resurrected on that glorious Sunday morning, they could be like, you know, that makes sense. He told us and he showed us he's the resurrection and the life. Yeah, that makes sense. And y'all, the fact that Jesus knew Lazarus was going to die, the fact that he knew how painful that was going to be for Mary and for Martha, and he let that happen, he waited for that to happen, that does not mean that he does not care, okay? I just want to make sure that we understand that. In verse 5, John said that Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Well, the Greek word that John uses for love is agapeo. That's the big one, right? That's the big love word. That's the one that describes the love of God. That's the love that is sacrificial and it's selfless and it's self-emptying. It's a love that's willing to suffer in order to give good to other people. Jesus loved this family so much, he was willing to suffer the pain of letting Lazarus die and suffer the pain of letting his sisters grieve him so he could give them a greater good. So he could show them the glory of God. And when the glory of God was ready to be revealed, because it was God's timing according to God's purposes in order to accomplish God's will, that's when Jesus showed up. That's what we see in verse 17. And we're going to pick that up next week. So I hope you'll be back for that. But right now, we're going to observe the Lord's Supper as a church family. This Communion Sunday here at Legacy, when we remember Jesus' blood that was shed and his body that was broken so that we could be made whole again. So that we could go home again. So think about your life. Think about your witness. And let the Holy Spirit, who is our helper, right? Let him help us see if our lives and our witness is what Jesus wants it to be. And when we're ready, please come to his table.
They say sometimes you win some, and sometimes